It's my life. Change your news sound radio. 92 FM. This is a community hour. And I'm Pete Dane. Now, whenever we hear the word Docklands these days, it's more likely to conjure up, I don't know, an office block or some sort of exclusive penthouse apartment, really. But East London, of course, has a proud maritime history dating back centuries. It was one of the busiest ports in the world, of course. And with that came not only trade, but the transport of goods, but also a thriving ship building industry. Here to look at this tradition and some great ideas of how to keep this heritage alive, we're joined now live in the studio by Ian Puxley from the Thames Ironworks Heritage Trust. Ian, thanks for joining us here on New Sound Radio 92 FM.
Hi Pete, glad to be here.
Well, first of all, I'll tell you what exactly is the Thames Ironworks Heritage Trust?
Okay, well, just a few months ago, somebody came up with a bright idea of restoring historic lifeboats built by Thames Ironworks down at Leemouth in the River Lee, and restoring them and turning them into pleasure craft to operate around the Olympic Park. This provides a great connection between West Ham United, which was the successor to the works team of Thames Ironworks FC, and their heritage just a few miles downstream from where the Olympic Stadium will be.
There's a lot in there, I'll tell you. Right, first of all, let's get this right. Now, this shipbuilding thing, this was, what is it, the Thames Ironworks company, was it?
Thames Ironworks Shipbuilding
Company. Where exactly on the river?
They were all around Orchard Close and both banks of the River Lee at where it comes out to the Thames.
Right, okay, I know the bit there you mean, yep.
So down in Callingtown, so from about 1850 onwards, Thames Ironworks.
Trinity Boy Wharf, isn't that
Trinity what Boy Wharf
that sort of area?
That area, and just north of there and east of there.
Right, okay.
So from 1850 onwards, that was where Thames Ironworks was established.
And what did they used to build? Is it just boats they used to build, or was it all sorts of things?
Well, initially it was just big boats, so boats for the Admiralty, boats for foreign governments, pleasure craft, and they diversified in the 90s to include lifeboats.
Right, okay. Now, when you say lifeboats, is this, because I'm thinking there's two types of lifeboats. There's the lifeboats that, you know, Royal National Lifeboat Institute. Now, they go around when somebody's in trouble out at sea. They launch these things out and they go off to sea and they go and they rescue people. And the other lot is like on like a liner, if it all starts to go on the Titanic or whatever, it all starts to go a bit wrong, they launch the lifeboats and everyone jumps in. Which sort is this lot?
This is the RNLI lifeboats.
Oh, right, the ones that actually used to go around saving people and things
like that. That's right. So, I mean, from the time they took over the building of lifeboats, they built 208 lifeboats for the RNLI.
And this was for all round Britain,
they served from Scotland to Land's End. The whole country was covered with them.
Right, so they kind of had the contract for building these things.
They did.
And these must have been quite a design as well, because I don't know anything about boats, but I'm just thinking, if you was going to design a lifeboat, you'd be thinking, well, you're going to be going out in the roughest weather, because that's when all the problems happen. So if you're going to be designing a boat, you'd want to have one that was, well, pretty seaworthy, wouldn't you? You can cope with all sorts of things.
Absolutely. These boats were built to last 25 years, but 100 years later, they're virtually, intact, perfect.
Okay, and what are they made from?
They're built from South American mahogany, generally.
It's the ironworks company, but they still use wood, did they?
Okay. Well, I say they took over the lifeboat building companies when they needed to diversify. So some of the contracts with the Admiralty weren't as lucrative as they should be. So it was a chance to, diversify, cover more bases.
Okay, and was this the Royal National Lifeboat Institute? You know, like they have that Lifeboat Day. I don't know when it is, actually, but I know you always sort of like you put some money in the box and you get... Was this the same organisation?
Absolutely. What a lot of people don't know as well is that from 1880 through to 1938, the RNLI's Poplar Depot serviced the whole country. So all the boats that needed to be restored were serviced in Poplar.
Really? That's incredible, isn't it? And these boats, I mean, how did they get them down, say, from up in Scotland and things? Were they just bring them around by sea, would they?
Well, generally, the ones that were built by Thames were tested locally, and then they would do sea trials, so they'd row them. These were rowing lifeboats.
Rowing boat? I can't believe. Well, you'd go out rescuing people on a rowing boat.
Many of these were rowing lifeboats until the 1930s. So,
really?
Yeah. 15 men rowing out in the roughest seas.
That's incredible. You can't picture that, can you? It's
like, quite amazing.
It is, yeah. Okay, so when we're talking about, when's the last of these lifeboats made? What sort of period are we talking about here?
Okay, well, Thames Ironworks went bust in 1912, and so that was the last one that was purely built by them.
Yep.
10 more were built elsewhere that they had contracts for. So from that time onwards, I mean, they built from 1896 to 1912, there'd be 208 lifeboats which served right up to, I think the last one serving was about 1948, 1950.
Okay, and how many of these are left?
Right, well, in terms of, there's probably maybe about 30 that are still around.
Well, that's quite a lot, really,
about
isn't
208,
it?
208, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, do you know, I mean, how have you been able to locate them? How do you find an old lifeboat?
Well, there's Historic Lifeboat Owners Association, and these enthusiasts track them down. They take pictures.
I suppose because they were always, I suppose when they'd finished work as a lifeboat, people would think, well, that's a good boat, I'll hang on to that.
Sure.
So, of course, you know, it would be actually be a quality piece of kit, wouldn't
sure.
it?
Sure, many of them have been converted to houseboats or cruisers.
Right. How big are these things?
They vary in size. I mean, right. It's not one size fits all because...
Oh, right. I had a picture that would all be the same as the standard products. Yeah, no. Okay.
Because, I mean, around the coast, you've got different coastal conditions. Some go off slipways, some can't because of cliffs and so on. So they vary everything from 33 foot long to 46 feet long.
All right, these are big affairs then.
They're quite big.
They're big, okay.
Yeah.
Now, there's also this association as well. I mean, I haven't quite got this association with West Ham United. What's it? What's the association with that?
So
the football club. Yeah.
Okay. So in 1890, there was a big strike in 1889, 1890.
That was the dock strike, was it?
That's right. Yep. And Arnold Hills wanted to foster greater, improved relations with his men. And so he created a lot of clubs for them, membership of a cycling club, operatic society, and a football club. So in 1895, the football club was created, and that was Thames Ironworks FC. So they were around for about 5 years before they wanted to become professional, and he didn't want a professional club. So that club was formed as West Ham United.
Okay, so it started off, I mean, yeah, before professional football, really, wasn't it? This
That's
was
right.
like, well, as we understand it now, with multi-million pound deals and things like that.
That's
yeah,
right.
They just started off as the works team on a Saturday afternoon or
yep.
Sunday morning, when they used to do it, a couple of pullovers at the end of the field sort of thing, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, something very much like that, you know, so the River Till would become the, you know, defender, and that was the way it started.
Yeah, nice, amazing. Okay, right, let's go back to these lifeboats, though. Yeah, now you're saying you found, how many did you say you found?
Well, there are around about 30 that are still existing around the country. Some of them are houseboats, some of them are in museums. One or two are able to be rowed occasionally or motorboated occasionally, but none are in daily use. So what we've done is we want to buy four and convert those.
And when you say convert them for use, what are you going to do with them?
Okay, so we're going to restore them as close to their original detail as possible, but make them practical and comply with health and safety for operating daily tours within the Olympic Park.
Now you said daily tours. What's your plan? You're going to be hire these boats out, or you go on trips up and down the canal? Because of course, East London's got loads of waterways around. You can kind of forget it, can't you?
That's right. So we can take about 12 people on each boat at a time due to the safety regulations, and we'll have like four operating. So they'll be running every sort of 20 minutes trips around, literally from right next to the stadium if we can get moorings there.
That'd be brilliant, wouldn't it? And would you say this, because, of course, there's increasingly the rivers can be seen as a form of transport, as well as, I mean, you're talking about more pleasure cruise type thing. This would be sort of like, you know, a day out with the family sort of thing. But, I mean, in terms of transport as well, has anyone sort of investigated that as well? So I know some people talked about this a number of years ago, I remember
So the angle we have really is educational tours.
Right.
Connecting people with their heritage. So, I mean, very much part of the restoration process is involving local people in that. So we'll have a master and we'll have apprentices working under him. What we're trying to do is re-establish Thames Ironworks as a shipbuilding company in the East End.
Right, okay, so you'd be restoring boats and things like that.
That's right.
That'd be incredible, yeah. Now, when you're saying restoring these boats, I always sort of wonder, well, these are wooden boats, or pretty much all of it's wood. How much of this is really left? How much is going to be the original boat? How much is going to be stuff that you've gone down, I don't know, the local builder's merchant to buy?
Very much. I mean, the first boat we looked at is the Helen Smitten, which is in the hands of a professional restorer currently.
Yep.
And the hull for her is 97% intact. So
really? That's incredible. I mean, that's a real sort of thing to the people who made these things originally,
sure.
That all these years later, they were never meant to last anything like as long as this.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, this one has served as carrying sheep to offshore islands and things, so it's had a full life after it was a lifeboat for 20-odd years. So it's done a lot of work.
Okay, they've got to clear all the mess out that the sheep left behind, I presume.
I hope so.
And you said it's professional restorers. I mean, is there a whole, you know, who's doing this and who's involved in all this? Is it expensive business, is it?
It is, but, I mean, we'll be employing local colleges. So the Building Skills College in Stratford are interested.
Yep.
The Company of Shipwrights That they've offered to help with apprenticeships there. So these people will be learning on the job as well as employing experts to do the work.
This sounds absolutely fantastic. And at the end, what sort of time scales are you looking at? When do you hope that the first trip, when can I go down? I want to go on the first trip, you see. When do you reckon this will be? How long ago have you thought?
We're thinking the first one will probably be ready sometime in 2015.
Okay, that's not so far away.
That's when the Olympic Park waterways will be reopened.
Right, okay, yeah, because they're all closed up at the moment, aren't they? Yeah, you can't actually take things down there. That sounds absolutely brilliant. I mean, where did this idea come from? This is something I'd never really, until I started to look into this story, I'd never really heard of it. I'd heard of the Thames Ironworks and people like that, you know, and up the irons. I'd heard all that sort of story before, but I'd never heard of this thing about the lifeboats before. I mean, where did it come from?
Very few people had heard about it. Chairman Gavin Redknapp discovered this just in research that he was doing.
This is almost by accident, sort of.
Well, yeah, I mean, he was looking in trying to connect the Olympic Stadium with the heritage of the club. A lot of people don't want to go because of, you know, they think it's just moving to a soulless stadium. It's got no connection to the roots of the club, and we're trying to re-establish that. Gavin discovered the lifeboat connection, and it just mushroomed from there. A few messages on West Ham message boards, and here we are 2-3 months later with a thriving trust.
West Ham United, are they interested in it as a project?
They are. We've softly approached with them, really. We want to go to them when we've got a true story to tell and we've got some money and say, right, okay, you've got to give us some money as well. But their PR department have been in touch. They want to help us out with the launch PR.
Yeah, no, that would be absolutely great. I mean, money, yeah, because we're talking about, at the end of the day, like a lot of these things, there's got to be some startup costs. I mean, ultimately, presumably, you want to be sort of fairly self-sufficient in terms of, like, you'd be charging people a certain amount of money for going on these boat trips and things like that, which would generate some revenue. But, of course, up until that point, what are you going to do about that?
Initially, yeah, that is the big hurdle. So we're thinking West Ham fans will be major contributors. Additionally, we think the Heritage Lottery Fund will contribute because we've got a great story to tell. We'd be involving
it
local
is,
people.
Isn't it? Still think that I could see them supporting that. Yeah, and it's a good cause as well.
And other grant-making bodies will support us, we think.
Okay, I'm sure. So you're in the process of doing that at the moment?
That's right. We're attacking the fundraising plan at the moment.
That's absolutely brilliant. I'm really looking forward to this, going down a boat. It'd be great, wouldn't it, going down the canals and things like that. I know when I have been down them sort of occasionally on a boat and things like that, it's like this whole world opens up. You see it in a completely different way, don't you?
It's really something to look forward to. It'll be a fantastic connection.
I tell you, we've got to go to the break now, yeah? But before we do, yeah, finally, yeah, if there's one reason, yeah, that we should save the lifeboats of the Thames Ironworks Company, yeah, and up the Amazon, up the irons, yeah, what would that be?
It's really the connection of the club to its historic roots. There's nothing better to, listen to the stories about the past, but to actually do a trip in one, that's something that was produced by the club, will be absolutely unique. No other club can do this.
So Ian Puxley from the Thames Ironworks Heritage Trust. Thanks for joining us on New Sound Radio 92 FM. But you will stay, won't you? Because after the break, we've got a special report on the arms fair that's been taking, well, it's still taking place today, actually, down there in Docklands. Yeah, you stay for that, won't you?
I will. Thanks very much.
Stay tuned to New Sound Radio 92 FM.